Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, where we cover topics such as professionalism, self-improvement, and becoming a better developer. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash. Today we will be talking about architects and architecture. Tell me, what do you think of when you hear the word architecture?
Typically, I think of the overall design of a system.
So you mean like the technology that's using?
No. More like if you're looking at a building. So the word architecture came from the construction industry, and it describes the layout of a building, including the different rooms, where the doors are, how tall the building is, things like that. So if we take that same paradigm and we apply it to the code, then the architecture would describe more the layout of the code than it would the different technologies that you might be using.
So do terms such as database and framework and the technologies used come into play when we talk about architecture?
They really shouldn't. Those are just decisions of the technologies you've decided to use. The technologies you use are... should be interchangeable if your architecture is a good architecture. You should be able to change out which database you're using or change out which framework you've chosen to support your web application, and it shouldn't be that big of a deal. Most people shrug those concepts off and say, well, how often do you change your database? And for the most part, yeah, we're probably not changing our database very much, but anyone who's been doing .NET or JavaScript development in the last 5 years has probably had to change their framework, probably more than once. And if we architected the application correctly, then those framework changes should have minimal impact on the actual application.
So what are the key aspects of good architecture?
So it seems like the technology, those decisions are, like you're saying, more like a detail. And really, like, the key elements of architecture, of good architecture, is to create a design where, like you're saying, you can change the details. The best architecture is one that kind of tells, when you look at what it's designed, it shows what kind of application it is. So if I look at the design of a hotel, I see that I look at it and I go, hey, that's a hotel. Or if I look at a gas station architecture, I know that's a gas station. If I'm looking at a web payment processing application, I should know that that's a web payment application.
So when we look at applications that have been written in the past, they conform more to, there's a website, there's a middle tier, there's a business layer, there's a data access layer. That really doesn't describe the purpose of the system.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be much better if, instead of saying that there's a data access layer and there is a business layer and there is a web, probably MVC layer, it would be better if they said that they were a payment processing system that housed the capabilities of, let's say, an ATM machine or a HR section where you have the ability to add or remove employees, or you have the ability to process people's paychecks. Those should be the things that you see when you look at the source code for the application. You should see what it is capable of doing, not how it is capable of doing it. Expanding on Ash's explanation for a good architecture really should maximize flexibility. You should be able to go and add new things to the system, remove things from the system, change out the choices that you've decided to make as far as your tooling, change your framework, change your database, change, probably not change your language, because that's much more difficult, but you should be able to change any of the minor decisions that you've made.
Although, like, if you're talking about like a larger system or something like that, that's maybe even using like microservices as like the whole, or maybe a subsystem of a larger system, you might end up saying, actually, there's a language that gives us a better feature to actually complete that problem. So there's a better library, there's better something else that, so the, you know, the architecture, a better architecture is going to give us the opportunity to have that feature abstracted away in such a way that we can swap that out with the right tool for the right, solving the right problem.
Absolutely. So, John, I know in the past that you liked to design applications from the ground up, so to speak, starting kind of at the database. And you've come around. Now you feel more like, or at least I think you feel more like I do, as far as how to design an application, starting with the business requirements and really worrying about database and stuff later. Why don't you talk about why you decided to change that? Why do you think now, like you do, about architecture instead of the way you did?
I very much used to be a database first guy. As I've continued to progress in my career, I've had the opportunity to work more closely with end users and with business users and with product owners. And I find it's much more important to get the actual requirements of a system, to find out how users are going to interact with the system, and then build around that desired functionality and worry about things like data storage at a later date, because really that's a detail of the system that can be delayed until you work out the underlying business requirements. It's pretty easy to describe systems in such a way that we have a React front-end single-page application that interacts with a .NET Core web API backend that has a business layer and a data access layer. So how can we work towards describing our systems and speaking about our systems in terms of more what their function is and the purpose of the applications?
I really think that's a matter of configuring the proper interface between the tools you're using and your actual business code. A lot of people, they'll go and make a new application, and that new application, especially if you're doing something like C#, basically screams that it is a C# web application using MVC, and it's going to connect to Entity Framework to get stuff out of a SQL database. We can create literally interfaces in C# between those different layers, though. If you create another project that's going to house, at least to start, to house your business logic, then you can structure your business logic project to represent what it is that your application is actually doing. Break it out into files and folders that make sense to describe the purpose of your application. Then just create interfaces and consume those interfaces inside of the web project and potentially your data layer. And then those two pieces then become something that you can swap out, and they are not the important part of your application. You might name the MVC project something like application.web, and then it's just, or application.ui.web even. It's just a piece of your application that's used specifically for UI. It's not actually the core of your application. The core of your application will be somewhere else. If you do it in the way that I'm suggesting, then that core piece, the extra project, could actually be consumed in multiple other projects. Let's say you had a team that was doing mobile development and they had chosen to use Xamarin Forms. Well, you can have your business layer imported either as a DLL, a NuGet package, or just import the project into the Xamarin Forms application, and it can have its own UI and possibly its own data source if it needs to. Then you can have the same thing for a web app and have a web app that uses the business layer and then has its own UI and potentially its own data source. If you broke it up into microservice style, like Ash was talking about, then you could even swap out the language. You could have half your business logic in Java and parts of it in C# and parts of it in Python and parts of it in JavaScript, all working together, and it could all describe what your actual business use cases are and leave the details up to the last mile, where just at that very last point is where we're going to decide whether it's a web UI or a phone UI or an IoT interface, and also what the data source is going to be. It could be a local SQLite server. It could be a SQL database in the cloud. It could be a Redis cache somewhere. It's all interchangeable.
So you've both mentioned microservices. Is that architecture?
No, that's still implementation. It allows you some more flexibility, but in and of itself, it's not architecture. having a section of your application that is set aside to perform a business use case is the architecture. Whether that's a microservice or a class library or a NuGet package or whatever is just a decision of implementation.
Just like MVC wouldn't be the architecture, it's a pattern that's used to help solve and organize the web UI portion of getting HTML to the browser, to your browser. Microservice would just be a pattern that's used to help break up the actual business, the actual functionality in order to kind of orchestrate the whole system. So you might even use that in conjunction with other patterns to actually have on any given system.
And this week we're at Codepalooza in Louisville, Kentucky. And I attended a good session earlier today on design patterns. One key takeaway that I took from that session was that design patterns really are just a way for us to describe functionality or parts of an application quickly and easily with an agreed upon term. So is that same model something that we can apply to architecture?
I would say that's absolutely the goal of a good architecture. Well, one of the goals of a good architecture, aside from the flexibility, is communicating the purpose. So in that sense, choosing a particular design pattern could be considered part of architecture, because at the lower level, you are deciding how you want to communicate the purpose and use of that application to another developer.
So for example, MVC might be the architecture that's being used to actually solve the web problem, right? Like, it's the architecture of the web sub-project, sub-piece. Would you agree with that?
Sort of. The waters get a little muddy when your design pattern is also your framework. The problem with web implementations for MVC is that they kind of rule over the entire application. And so when you're looking at an application that was built using MVC, all you see is MVC. Whereas the original MVC and the other design patterns, they're more on a micro level. You don't look at something that's using a design pattern and immediately go, oh, here we chose to use the adapter architecture. You know, it's more like, well, I see that there's a customer detail class, and then inside that class, I can see that we are using the customer detail class, and we're using the adapter pattern to go in and get data from an API, which is one of our microservices. So at the class level, the class level architecture is using an adapter pattern, but its purpose is still readily available, that it is for customer detail.
For the last few projects, we've been breaking out parts of our applications into distinct features and naming those parts of the applications after the feature that we're attempting to implement. Like in years past, where we might have had a billing service in our business layer in our services project, maybe we've broken out a billing feature that contains a billing processor and any calculation managers or utilities, where it's very evident where the billing system begins and ends.
I'd say that's absolutely the direction to move towards. That's the goal, because then it's pretty easy to go, okay, well, this section of the application deals specifically with billing. So if I need to do anything with billing or I want to know anything about billing, then I can just easily go here and find out what that is. And that makes the separation of concerns within the application very, very clear. And from a high-level standpoint, you can tell what the application is supposed to be doing.
I think that makes sense.
So are there other tips and tricks to designing a system with architecture in mind?
Have good requirements?
Yeah, that's the unfortunate answer. So the majority of development shops are attempting to be more agile. In that attempt, instead of figuring out what agile means, they are moving quickly and not doing some of the due diligence that they may have done in a more waterfall approach. That can lead to some problems. You do want to understand the problem domain before you have somebody start working on it. Better requirements really is the answer, but those are more difficult to get with most development shops attempting to go agile. In my experience, those development shops aren't taking the appropriate amount of time to understand what agile is. And so instead of doing the proper due diligence to gather good requirements in incremental fashion. Instead, what they're doing is they are not gathering requirements, and they are just issuing a command to implement a design, or like a UI design, or just simply telling the devs that they want it to do X when they don't understand what X means. And so when you give a developer limited requirements or insufficient requirements, you end up with limited and insufficient code, which is not going to be a good architecture, because we will quite literally type the requirements into our editors, and whatever falls out is generally whatever falls out. The best way to get good, clean architecture and good, clean code is to have good, clean requirements.
I think a lot of the times what's being delivered to the developer is, here is a solution that I would like you to implement.
Yeah, we want an input box with a button, and then when they click the button, then it'll go to another page, and that page will display their rank.
This might be an area where the topic of domain-driven design and ideas like bounded context come into play, helping to kind of bring those requirements to the surface.
Those things can definitely help from a developer perspective. If we can properly break down the problem space into non-implementation specific requirements, simply there's a need, there is a context or a situation, and there is an expected result, then I think that even accidentally, software architecture would start to improve.
So we've kind of really discussed architecture and what it is. Who is actually making this architecture?
Well, my opinion is that it's the developers writing the code. In most shops, the individual that has the title of architect is generally not writing that much code. And if you're not writing the code, then you're not really forming the architecture. So you're not really an architect. However, I do feel that every single developer, even the junior developers, are actual architects, because they're writing the code. They're making the new files. They're choosing what folders to put them in. They're making the new projects, and they're choosing what application to put them in. That is the architecture. Typically, architects tend to make the high-level decisions, such as what language we're going to write this application in, what our database is going to be, what frameworks we're going to choose. But as we discussed earlier, those aren't really architectural decisions. Those are implementation decisions. Those are, the company doesn't want to spend more money on product X because product Y has been doing fine for years kind of decisions.
And the problem with the architect role that you're describing is that oftentimes they don't have to live with the decisions that they've made.
Right. They're not in the trenches suffering because everyone is trying to write this Web 2.0 application using COBOL and Redis.
There's also the danger with that particular role, or the role as you describe it, in that they're delivering solutions once again and telling the other developers that are the ones putting the code into the editor, here is a solution I want you to implement.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but that is a good point, yeah. Basically, anyone handing a developer a solution is asking for trouble.
So should we get rid of that title? I mean, what is there a better title? Is there an issue there? What we do need people to make those decisions, obviously, or do we?
To Clayton's point, I think the developers are making those decisions.
Well, the architecture decisions, but what about some of the implementation details? Some of the implementation details may be around the company doesn't want to spend a certain amount of money, or so is it the developer that is going to make that decision, or might there some of those details that are true details, not architecture pieces, might need to be made by someone else?
I think you're describing constraints of a system. So hopefully those types of requirements would come out in discovery as you're discussing the system with the product owners, with the business owners. Surely you'll have someone that is acting lead on a project, and maybe that's today, maybe that's this week, maybe it's for the project, but maybe it's up to them to be the final say-so on a particular decision, or maybe it is the client has determined that this is a constraint of the system and we must adhere to it, and we have to figure out how to work with those constraints.
In which case, the individual's title would be constrainer.
All right, so my company does have solution architects. I think the role is a little bit different than the one we've described. So in their role, one of the main things that they're doing is they're actually looking at orchestrating a lot of subsystems. So when you're looking at a problem that is much larger than even maybe a team of developers, or you might have multiple teams or a very large team, the problem needs to be dealt with, and so they're working more in the domain realm of breaking down the system into the various components and breaking down the requirements into their realms, their contexts, and then assigning someone or assigning a group of teams to kind of orchestrate, hey, you need to solve this problem because we need that problem solved as a collective. That seems like a pretty appropriate use for the term. And what do you guys think?
It certainly sounds like those on your team are identifying problems and defining problems and bringing the problems to the team to find solutions for. It is not their role, and if I understand you, it's not their role to define solutions to implement.
Yeah, so they're knowledgeable about the actual development. Like, they're usually former developers, very high level, very capable developers, but they're not bringing, hey, I want you to develop this particular, here's the solution for you to develop. But they do understand the problems that developers are going to face. And so they're helping kind of organize the requirements, not just organize the requirements, organize the problem into the sections that says, hey, this problem needs to be solved by you guys. And they might even come up with some big picture solution. Like when you're talking about a system like a microservice, well, we are going to need, we might, you know, they might put a constraint and say, look, I need you guys to have an API here that these guys are going to talk to, right? So that's a constraint. That's actually adding a constraint to the problem, but it's not telling them, look, this is the solution that you need to adhere to.
Yeah, that part of the job, I might actually say, would be something like a systems integration engineer.
Okay.
You know, they're saying, like, you know, these two things need to talk, and we've checked with both teams or whatever, and we've determined that the best way to communicate over this channel is using technology X. They are determining the best integration path, and then people are conforming to that integration path. At least for that part, that's not really architecture. They are solving a specific problem.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that is architecture. I think that there's architecture at different levels, and the problem of the whole problem needs to be solved. And they're saying, okay, well, I'm going to divide this problem, this big problem, into smaller problems. Let team A or persons A solve problem A, and team B solve problem B. But there is I see that there's a very good method of solving problems A and B together that defines the whole, and that is a problem solving task, and you're producing something. So just like an architect. So if you take a look at like a lead architect who's like actually designing a building, like they may focus on kind of a grand idea of the building, but then they'll have teams of people actually work on sub parts of that building. And they have designs and constraints that they say, no, I want this rotunda to be of particular shape and size because I want to have this particular look in this grand building. But they may not deal with some of the details of how that rotunda actually gets constructed and whatnot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think you described them as solutions architects.
Yes.
So I think that's an important distinction, that in what you're describing, they are architecting solutions, whereas what we talked about in the first half of the show was more the architecture of a system. There's a subtle difference, but I think it's an important distinction.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, absolutely. So we're all architects, and the architecture is the architecture is the code that we're creating, isn't it?
Is it similar to DevOps in that there's not a DevOps role or there's not a DevOps title, but we're all doing DevOps? Maybe there shouldn't be an architect title. We're all making architectural decisions.
That's definitely the way I feel about it. Is everyone is doing it. So there's no reason to have a specific title for it.
But maybe if a program or a system is large enough, there should be someone steering the ship towards a solution architecture.
Yeah, I think I could get behind that. So we'd love to hear from you. Leave us a comment on iTunes and on our blog.
If you liked this podcast, follow us on Twitter at Six Figure Dev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.